The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
The Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
The Boston Red Sox win a gem of a game, 3-2 over the Baltimore Orioles, winning the series by far, taking at least three games out of the four, and raising their record up to 74-60 on the season. I'm Nick the Voice, joined by Doug Aitchison and Chris Felico, and we are the Bastards of Boston. Want more? Go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles. Now, tonight was a beauty and a definite nail-biter, and can I just lead off by asking a question? Did anyone on this team need a home run more than Sedan Rafaela?
Absolutely not, dude. That was the best. That was exactly what he needed and the team needed.
I feel like I needed it more, but other than me. No, I think Sedan Rafaela, especially with the start that he had the first half, I mean – he was our MVP. He's completely cooled off since the second half. Been very inconsistent. Been consistent in the field. Obviously, we'll get to some more. There were some freaky, fluky plays between him and Duran today. But what do you expect when you're taking your best center fielder and then putting him at second base every other night? So, but stoked about the home run, stoked about the win.
Yeah, and speaking of home runs, Roman Anthony with a leadoff home run. The dude is really unlocking his power full force. There's been some concern I've seen over the strikeout rate. He's striking out a lot more, but I feel like he was always the type of guy who was going to strike out a lot. And if you start hitting doubles like he does and start hitting home runs like he's starting to, combine that with the walks, I mean, you've got a killer player. That's his seventh home run on the season now, if I believe. Yeah, and that went 416 feet, 108 miles per hour off the bat, just an absolute bomb. And this kid is just a joy to watch.
He really is. He's just, it doesn't feel like you're watching a rookie. It just feels like you're watching one of the best players in the MLB. And he's doing things that we haven't seen from a kid this age in a long time. I mean, he's making me think, you know, down the line, like, his ceiling for me is just, I mean, I can't even imagine what it is at this point. He's seeming like he could be the best Red Sox player I ever seen at one. Like, it looks like he has that type of potential, like MVP, all-star every year. And I think a lot of his strikeouts, even though like he needs to swing the bat, he gets called on a lot of low strikes that seem to be balls and seem to be that he knows their balls. And I think, you know, if you see him a few years down the line when he's an all-star every year and umps start actually having a lot of respect for him, he might even get more walks.
Yeah, it's funny because someone tweeted, I think it was Randy, one of our regulars tweeted, the fact that in August, I think almost a third of Roman Anthony's outs have been strikeouts, right? But I would agree with you, Doug, because – I do feel like there are a lot of strikeouts that he is getting that are not necessarily swing and misses. It's low outside corner, sometimes inside, but it seems like low more towards the middle outside of the plate, that it's almost like he's got too good of an eye Right. And listen, the umpire, it's human error. Like, they're going to get some wrong. I know that's why we're talking about robots and going to whatever non-human umpires. But it's almost like, I remember Tristan Casas, right? Like, in the beginning, he had such a good eye that he almost had the same issue. And then he translated into just swing and misses, which we don't want to see happen with Roman Anthony, because, right, you know, there's been a lot of conversation about the fact that, like, all right, who's going to replace Devers? Roman Anthony has the capability to basically replicate the offense that Rafael Devers was giving us and actually be able to surpass him, because I think his eye is better. I think his, you know, swing and miss rate is a lot better than Rafael Devers as well. I think he's got 3 or 4 home runs now, it feels like, in the last week. So, you know, I was one of the biggest complainers about the fact that he wasn't showing enough, you know, power. I was calling him the singles merchant. So it is nice to see the fact that he is getting home runs, but I don't want it to be at the cost of obviously swing and misses and even, you know, striking out, whether it's looking or swinging. I think if there is one hole in his game right now, it's, you know, it's nice to have a leadoff home run, but there's been a couple of instances where he has come up with either the game tied or with us down and a chance to either tie the game, take the lead. And he hasn't really done that. He's not even getting contact on the ball. And in a lot of cases, that's where his strikeouts are coming without even swinging the bat. I would like to see him at least get the ball in play, get that run home, situational hitting. But other than that, I mean, it's hard to complain about the kid. He has the ability to be one of the better players that I've ever seen wear a Red Sox uniform in my lifetime.
Without question. I mean, the dude, when you take into consideration his age, how well he is coming together in all aspects of his game, average, on base, power, and then the fielding is good. The base running is solid. You know, it's really just amazing. It's awe-inspiring. And I agree with you, Chris, that I do think that he has the capability to surpass Devers because his game is just so complete. You know, there's no holes in it except for, like you said, the sort of game tying situations or game winning situations, which I think says equal parts about him and the rest of the offense that they keep forcing him into this hero role. You know, you're right that this is his 3 home runs in the last 7 games right now, 5 in the last 15. He's really heating up that power over the last month or so. And meanwhile, I mean, the average is staying great. The on base is staying great. And it's just absolutely amazing. And exactly like was just highlighted by George White. I think Anthony has 31 Ks this month, and he's still hitting 300 with a high on base. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I actually do have the number up here. Over the last 30 games, 41 strikeouts in 30 games. That's a lot. And yet he is slashing 310, 419, 522, which is just beyond elite. It's amazing.
Yeah, imagine he just fixes, I won't even say a third, even just a quarter of those strikeouts. I mean, think about what the potential is with this kid. You know, to your point, Nick, he definitely has the ability, and it's a lot, though. He's still a rookie, and I think sometimes because he's so good at this point, we keep forgetting it every night. Because, I mean, he's just doing things we haven't seen before. The problem is that right now, because the Sox offense is so inconsistent and it's yearning and just lacking, you know, that clutchness and, like, being able to tack on runs unless apparently the team is wearing pinstripes with an NY on it. So a lot of it falls on someone's shoulder. And unfortunately, it's Roman Anthony because, to be fair, and I said it in the war room, him and Bregman are our best hitters. Like, it's not even a question at this point.
Oh, yeah.
So if they're not carrying our offense, like, yeah, it's great that Rafaela hit that home run, but I mean, we can't count on that every night. It's not a recipe for winning long term.
Most definitely. Another 0-6 with runners in scoring position. I mean, it says it all. I feel like the team had opportunities throughout. This could have been more than a 3-2 win, but at this point, I'm just happy that it was a 3-2 win.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't even talked about Bayo. I mean, just he was incredible. I mean, he shouldn't even have been in the position to have the loss, right? I mean, he should have been out. He should have been 7 full and 1 run, but wasn't even earned, right?
you could argue that he honestly shouldn't have given up a run, because right. Sadon Rafaela, 9 out of 10 times, doesn't drop that ball, in which 100%. Let's all like take a fact that we all had a gasp. I thought he broke his wrist.
Yeah.
It looked like a freaking Matsui like wrist roll at first in real time. And so there's one run. And then you basically have Sadon Rafaela and Jaren Duran not making up their mind of who's going to catch the ball. And I hate to say that's happened a couple of instances this season where they both kind of look at each other and it's like, oh, no, it's yours. No, it's mine. And no one catches it. And they're both more than capable. Sometimes they're almost, but they're both too capable that I think the other one thinks that they have it. And they just don't communicate. And they got to fix that, especially going into the playoffs.
Yeah, that one looked like should have been Jaren's.
Agreed.
With how much range Rafaela has still, that should have been Jaren's ball.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you, Chris. My mind was in the same place. Like, you have two center fielders, essentially, out there playing in the outfield, and both of them are going to immediately say, oh, that ball is hitting my general area code. Yes, it's mine, you know? 5 hits allowed, 1 walk, 6.2 innings. 2 runs allowed, unfortunately, 1 earned, and that drops Bayo's earned run average down to 2.99, below 3, which is almost silly to think about. If I told anyone at the start of the season that Brian Bayo would be pitching on August 27th and come out of the game with a 2.99 ERA, no one would have believed it. This guy's story so far is just incredible. And just like I said last night, I love the imagery of a friendly competition between him and Giolito, just one-upping each other and saying, oh, you're the number two, I'm the number two. Oh, you're the number two, I'm the number two. Who is it? At this point, I don't think there's a wrong answer.
No, there's really not. And I mean, I was calling like 2 nights ago. I was saying I'm sick of people saying Bayo isn't a number two, because we're seeing it now that people are finally starting to give it to him. But he's been great since halfway through last season. Right? He's been really, really good. And I mean, I think we're going to start seeing a lot more 66 jerseys around Fenway.
Yeah, I mean, Bayo's always had a propensity to have a good second half. And to your point, Doug, he had a good second half last season. It's kind of carried over into the season. He had a couple blips on the radar earlier this season, but like nothing in compared to Walker Buehler and even Giolito, who was shaky in the beginning of the season. Bayo was kind of the rock in those moments to Crochet's. He was the Robin, I would say, to Crochet's Batman. But at this point, it's a good problem to have, to be able to argue, is it Giolito? Is it Bayo? I would say Bayo's probably been more consistent. If I had to tell you who would I trust in a big spot, it's probably Bayo at this point, especially knowing the teams that we're more than likely going to have to face in the playoffs. He clearly is comfortable pitch against the Yankees, specifically in the Bronx, which might be our reality at this point, because let's face it, the Yankees are not going to lose against teams they shouldn't. And they're going to play a lot of teams that they should beat. That's just the harsh reality of it at this point. Good problem to have. Super happy about Bayo. And I would basically give him the slight edge to this point.
Yeah, it's really cool to see, as you guys pointed out, he's always been kind of a second half preference pitcher, at least since last year. And it's so funny to see the difference, because technically this year he's also having a better second half than the first half. You go back to 2024, his first 17 games started, 89.2 innings pitched, a 5.32 ERA. Then after the All-Star break, he really cleaned it up. 13 starts, 72.2 innings, a 3.47 ERA. He's been carrying that into this year, like you guys said, with 15 games started, 16 appearances, because there was that one game with the opener, 91.2 innings over those 16 essentially starts with a 3.14, and he has so far improved upon that in 7 starts, a 2.91. Absolutely absurd.
Yeah, if we clean up our fielding, he'd be even better. Because he's not really a strikeout guy. He's, he puts the ball into play, but he relies on defense to make plays. He keeps the ball in the yard, and he gets a lot of grind, a lot of ground outs, a lot of fly balls, and which is fine. You know, that's, I think it's even great sometimes to match him up game after Crochet when Crochet is striking out 11, 12, and then Bayo comes and he's, you know, he's throwing strikes that you can maybe get your bat on, but you're just not getting hits.
Yeah, it's a great point, Doug. It is a good change of pace going from Crochet, who is going to more than likely, I think in your average game, probably 8+ strikeouts you can realistically expect. And then Bayo is a ground ball pitcher, right? Like he relies on his defense, which is, when you think about his ERA now, thinking about it from that standpoint, like the fact that he's sub-3 with the defense behind him, because, all right, yeah, Story's had a good season. Bregman's had a good season, but like the other half of the infield has been very shaky with some of the players that have been there. And the fact that he's sub-3 and he's still getting the double play almost automatically at the rate that he is pretty impressive. I think what is going to be super interesting as we kind of shift gears here is George White put a point here, and I know a lot of Red Sox fans are talking about this, is like, what are the Sox going to do with that number 5 spot? Because let's face it, we've kind of been playing musical chairs now at this point as an organization the last couple of weeks. Now Walker Buehler's in, obviously, the bullpen. You've got Fitz is hurt. Unfortunately, what's new, I feel bad for the kid, but like that's kind of been his MO at this point. You know, he put a comment in there mentioning Harrison, and to my knowledge, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe there's at least speculation that Harrison is going to get a start, I believe, at the end of this week or over the weekend. At least that's what's slated to happen, which I don't know if that's the case, but I would be excited to see that. I know Tolley and Harrison are the two people that I want to see before the season ends, see what they got. We talked about it a couple of days ago on the podcast. What you guys think?
Most definitely. I'm not sure if anything is in stone yet, but I have heard those same rumors regarding Harrison. I know that there was some speculation about him starting a game previously. I think when we sort of did a de facto bullpen game, Harrison was pulled from the lineup. I'm not sure what the reason was for that, if we ever found out why. I didn't follow up. But I agree with you. These two guys are dudes that I want to see. I want to see them start. Obviously, when they're ready, I don't want to rush them, of course. And I'll actually add a third name to that list. I would be very interested in seeing David Sandlin, even if it is as a start and you know, he ends up stretching himself out a little bit. I know they're priming him for a bullpen role, but sort of giving him a trial by fire, saying, you know what, man, just go out there, try your stuff out. Try different approaches for different batters. Get some seasoning to see, are you going to be a postseason player or not? I really was a bit surprised that Walker Buehler was removed from the rotation when he was, because it kind of felt like we were at the tipping point of the season almost, where I was like, well, if he survived this long, you know, we're going to ride with him. And then they pull him. And, you know, I think it's the right call. Obviously, he wasn't really improving. But going with the opener into Fitz strategy didn't necessarily work out as intended. Fitz, of course, getting injured now adds an additional wrench to the plan. But it does open the door for some heroics. You know, I remember Hauk coming up in his not just his rookie year, but his debut year. And at the end of the season, having a couple of great starts. I believe the same thing happened with Fitz, funnily enough, where the FIP wasn't all that great, but the ERA was there. I would love to see either Harrison or Tolley or even a wild card like Sandlin be able to replicate that type of success.
Yeah, and then you got games with Pittsburgh coming up. You got games with the A's coming up. I feel like those are some good spots where you could throw both of those guys in there and get a start out of them against a team that, if they don't have their best game, that you feel like you can at least give them some run support in a game like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, another pitcher that we haven't talked about yet, but that has been absolutely just lighting it on fire. And we've been saying it all season, Aroldis Chapman, Randy, one of our regulars here, great point. I mean, should be in the top 5 for Cy Young award voting. I mean, honestly, it'd be like 100%. Top 3. 4-2, 26 saves, 1.04 ERA, 0.67 whip. Just in August, 7 saves, 0 ERA, 0.1 whip, 10.8 Ks per 9. That is absolutely insane. I mean, the guy is absolute nails. He's an odd. I mean, gosh, I don't want to make this comparison, but like I almost have to. It feels very like now I know what it must have felt like to be a Yankees fan with Mariano Rivera in the late 90s, early 2000s, prior to 2004, where you have a lead and it's like, all right, we're winning this game. Like it's unbelievable. It's a great feeling to have. And just the irony in the fact that like he was a Yankee last season and there was a lot of question marks behind him. And even from Yankees fans, like some were starting to question like, all right, is this kind of the end? Like what's going to happen with all this? We don't want him. And now they must be kicking themselves in the butt.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny to go back. I just recently on Twitter, someone retweeted the original signing news breaking moment of Chapman signing with the Red Sox. And the comment section was Red Sox fans lamenting the situation and Yankees fans laughing at us. And I'll be honest with you, when I saw the signing, I sort of rolled my eyes. I said, this guy is not going to be the answer. I like him in the bullpen, but he's certainly not a closer, not with that control. And he has completely shut me and everyone else up. And I can't say it enough. This dude is as close to automatic as I've ever watched. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say in my lifespan, obviously, Koji had the great season that he did. Chapman on pace to beat him out, really.
Yeah.
The only like closer that comes to my mind, like off the top of my head, that maybe you could say had a better season. Zach Britton had that absolutely insane 2016 where his ERA was like 0.5, 0.6. Right. It was something absolutely disgusting like that.
Yep.
Aside from an absolutely superhuman feat like that, Chapman is simply putting up one of the best closer seasons, at least in the 21st century, if not ever. And I completely agree. Cy Young nods are well-deserved for this guy.
Absolutely. We should have two in the top three. We should have the winner in Crochet, hopefully. And then he's right behind him. And, you know, we Chris, you were saying, you know, how it feels like to watch Mariano. I mean, he's getting to the level of, like, all time. He's top five, three closer all time, right? He's got numbers. He's got rings, right? I mean, he's legit that type of guy.
Yeah, it's, you know, when we signed him in the offseason, I remember a lot of Red Sox fans scoffing, rolling the eyes. And
oh, yeah.
I'll be honest, like I was excited, not because I thought he was going to do this. I just looked at it pragmatically from the fact that it's like, all right, yeah, the guy's got control issues, but he has a plethora of playoff and experience winning, frankly and honestly, that the Sox just don't have right now in that whole team and specifically in the pitching room. And I was like, you know what, that's going to help us at some point. It may not be this year, and who knows, he may not even be here a year from now, but like he might be able to teach them something and just bring in a different culture. And the thing is, even with his control issues prior, when he was on and he's throwing flames, like he brings a certain level of intimidation that the Sox haven't really had in a closer, honestly, since Papelbon. Like I can't remember a closer that we had that, you know, because you had, oh my God, who was our closer in 2018? I can't even remember his name now.
Kimbrel.
Oh my God. He used to give me a heart attack. He wasn't strike. He struck more fear in me than the people he was facing, if we're being honest.
He'd like walk the bases loaded and strike three yeah. in a row.
And then Koji Uehara, like as good as he was, I never went like, all right, like the guys coming up there are like fearful. But like with Papelbon, he was crazy. And like the guy could throw his 06, 07. Like I used to think of him like he was like our Mariano, was an automatic out. But
oh, yeah,
I mean, Chapman at this point, just unbelievable. And it's exciting to watch. And I really think like that's to me is the difference for us right now. If we can get into the playoffs and we could start making it bullpen games and you start talking about Whitlock and Chapman, there's not a team in the AL, maybe the MLB, that could like really match us arm for arm when it comes to those two.
Absolutely. And what I absolutely love about Chapman this year, especially, is that he's not showing any signs of slowing down with his age. It's not very common that a guy peaks at age 37. And yet Aroldis Chapman is putting together probably the best season of his career. You know, the guy's a physical beast, 6'4", 235 pounds is what he's listed at. And if you ever watch like his Instagram or something, see a clip of him working out, he's a beast. This dude is like jacked beyond belief. And the one thing, I mean, the dude was always going to throw gas. I mean, everyone knew that. But the thing with his control is that I have never seen a guy remedy something like that so late in his career. I mean, you look at the past 2 years. This is a guy with a career, by the way, walks per nine of 4.5. Over the past 2 years, he's had a walks per nine of 5.6, 5.7. The 2 years prior to that, 6.9, 6.1. It's absolutely ridiculous. The year before that, 3.1. He's improved on that. In fact, his walks per nine right now at 2.5 is the lowest he has ever thrown it. It doesn't make sense. It defies all logic. And yet, I'm not going to ask questions. Really, 2012, now that I'm looking at the numbers, 2012 was his age 24 season. He had a 1.51 ERA. Compare that to this year, a 1.06.
I mean, I brought it up on the pod Monday. I saw The Who last night at Fenway Park.
Oh, nice.
Roger Daughtry's 81, Peter Townsend's 80, and they were incredible. So you know, Chapman at 37. I mean,
yeah,
it's just sometimes, you know, things click. You know, sometimes it's just a different vibe. He said he always wanted to play for the Red Sox, right? He loved Louis Tiant being from Cuba, and you know, sometimes it's just. Who knows what it was, you know, really, but sometimes things click, and he obviously still has the physicality. You know, like my girlfriend's not the biggest baseball fan, but she sees him take the mound. She's like, this guy's a monster. I'm like, yeah, watch this. He's about to strike everybody out.
Yeah, no, he is a physical specimen. One thing I do want to correct, though, is Randy Clemens said, Pat Bunn is now pitching for the Savannah Bananas, God help us. It's actually not necessarily true. He was pitching for the Party Animals, who are part of Banana Ball, Randy. The only reason I know that is because my kids are absolutely addicted to Savannah Bananas at this point.
Have you seen them?
We haven't seen them in person. They want to see them so bad, but it's harder to get tickets to see them than any MLB team.
They sell out like years ahead of time. It's crazy. Yeah,
it's crazy. And to be honest, being a Sox fan the last couple of years, they weren't giving us any reason to want to go to baseball games, so they got addicted to Savannah Bananas. But
I went last year when they were at Fenway. It was honestly a great time.
Hopefully my kids don't do this because then they're going to be like, oh, talk to Doug. but, you know, to kind of shift gears here, another person we haven't really talked about is, I mean, we mentioned it, Seydon Farfalla needed that home run. But, like, let's just think of the outlook of this team if he doesn't hit that home run, right? Let's face it. He doesn't. We probably lose 2-1, another one-run loss, which has been that underlying thing that's been kind of stuck with this team throughout the whole year that's reared its ugly heads in terrible moments. And we'd be a half game behind the Yankees out of the first wild card. And all of a sudden the outlook is a lot different. And it's interesting because this team, the one thing I will give them credit for is they have seemingly the last, I would say, month found these weird ways to win. And they've started to come up with these clutch moments from the people that you least expect it from. In the moment at the time, like Seydon Farfalla was hitting a 2-run home run to win a game was not on my bingo card tonight. In fact, when Bregman got out in the eighth, I was like, game's over. Like, we just freaking lost. Yankees won, of course. The Blue Jays will lose. We won't make up ground. The Yankees will challenge for the division, and we're going to be fighting for a freaking second wild card. But it's thank God for Farfalla. That's all I can say.
Absolutely. And you saw a lot of guts from the team today, even despite the miscues, despite the error on Story, the pass ball on Wong, you know, the caught stealing by Hamilton, which is this guy like a good base thief or is he just fast? That's what I really need to find out.
It's a good question.
Cause I remember that old story about the designated pinch runner. He was like some Olympic level sprinter or something. A baseball team tried to get him to, you know, essentially pinch run, we get someone on base, we put in our Olympic level sprinter, and essentially you win the game, right? Except the guy didn't know how to steal bases. And so he was a below average base thief, ultimately, because it's so much more than just speed. It's so much more about tech, you know, technique, I mean, listen, I don't want to discount what Hamilton did last year, especially, really. I mean, 33 stolen bases, 4 caught stealing. Even this year, 18 stolen bases, 5 caught stealing. That's a pretty decent ratio. But I think it's telling to compare his production this year to his production last year and how the guy has just fallen off in every metric, you know? That being said, he's been kind of on fire this past week, batting .421 over the last 7 games, a multi-hit game for the 3rd time in 4 nights. You know, I'm not going to say, oh, Hamilton's turning a corner. That's not going to be my hot take, but it is nice to take those hits when you can get them. And having a guy like him produce, even if it's just a hit here and there, I mean, it's going to be important. And the same can be said for Wong, Narvaez, and Rafaela.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say Wong. I mean, just turning Wong and Hamilton from automatic outs to, you know, they still don't have to be great hitters, just not automatic outs, is just a huge upgrade for the team. You know, even if they're in the 8-9 spot, you know, that's huge. And Seydan, hopefully, you know, we all see Seydan as a streaky player. Hopefully this can really get him going. You know, I would have liked to see if the All-Star break didn't come when it came, you know, who knows, he might have still been hot.
Yeah, I mean, Rafaela is Jackie Bradley Jr. with a higher upside.
Yeah.
Right? Like, at his high points of his streaks, he's better than Jackie Bradley Jr. And his defense is probably slightly better as well. And the fact that he is more versatile lends itself so much more valuable than Jackie Bradley Jr. And I would also say that his floor is not as low as Jackie Bradley Jr. So he's invaluable to this team right now. And I think, you know, sometimes we forget, like, the fact that he's constantly going back and forth between two positions. And we take for granted, like, oh, he's a professional baseball player. Anyone could do that. It's like, second base and center field are not quite the same. Completely different skill sets, responsibilities. And frankly, it's a different level of athleticism that's required. Both require athleticism, but it's completely different. So the fact that he's able to kind of put that all together, mitigate his down points or his floor moments, and still be streaky enough and come up clutch enough, because he has been very clutch this season, to be able to win us some games and provide the impeccable defense that he does at both positions. I mean, you just got to tip your cap to the guy at this point.
Most definitely. And especially the fact that he was batting 5th tonight. You know, there was some speculation about, like, should we just stick this guy in the 9-hole and call it, you know, because that's where he had his most success. You know, I believe it was Jason who said that last night. And, you know, I agree with that. Give the guy some lower leverage at bats. But tonight he stepped up when the team needed it. He had that double a little earlier in the game. And then at the end of the day, I mean, he was the champion. And it's funny, with Chapman being set up to close, that's probably the closest you can ever get to walking off, you know, a game when you're actually in someone else's ballpark, hitting that beautiful bomb, going up by one run and saying, all right, Chappie, go get him.
Yeah, if you're a Baltimore fan, you leave after that home run. It's over.
Yeah, it sure felt that way. And, we talked about it kind of briefly before, but, you know, Robert brought up a good point. Is we talked about the communication between Duran and Rafael. They do need to communicate better, because this is something that has reared its ugly head throughout the season. Needs to change, especially with them more than likely making the playoffs at this point, because one run, especially with the way our offense is in the playoffs, that could be the difference between going home the first series or in a game-clinching moment, not being able, you know, to advance into the next series. And it's something from two people that are athletic and have played together long enough now that it shouldn't be happening. These aren't two rookies. These aren't two guys that have never played, you know, one coming in halfway through the season at a trade deadline. They know each other well enough. They know their tendencies. Just clean it up, guys. And Alex Cora's got to get a grip of it. I think, you know, another good point from a voice that I don't see often in here from Corey, that brings up a good point I know a lot of people are talking about. Is there a chance Yoshida could be designated for assignment if they activate Ref Snyder? I don't necessarily know about TFAing Yoshida, I know we don't love it at this point because, I mean, you want to talk about getting to a point where it's like at not even relatively competent or challenging at bats now at this point, right? I mean, it's almost an automatic ground out to second base every single time this guy's up, whether there's a runner in scoring position, a guy in third, no outs, whatever the situation is. You got to see more. And the fact that he's our DH, it's like, ugh. I know the broadcast was talking about Abreu, but I mean, Ref Snyder also brings us a little bit of versatility that could provide some much needed depth, and especially in a bat from the right side of the plate against left-handed pitching. What do you guys think?
I
don't think we would do it this right. I don't think we would do it this year. But I don't think I see him on the team next year. I think it would be an off-season thing.
Yeah, I'm really afraid that Breslow and more appropriately John Henry, I think they look at that money. They say, this guy's on the books. We aren't going to pay this guy to play for someone else. You know, we aren't going to pay this guy to do something somewhere else. And at this point, I just kind of wish that we left him down in Portland. You know, he looked great in the Scooby-Doo uniform. He was hitting great down there. It does really beg the question, why did we feel the need to rush him back? Because we didn't give the guy a whole lot of time to rehab. In the beginning of the year, he was kind of MIA. He was nursing a shoulder injury. They were trying to get him ready to play the field. We were saying, where is the guy? He's like off the grid. He's in Guantanamo, for God's sake. And then he has a rehab game, maybe two, and then suddenly he's back in the DH spot hitting in high leverage situations. And it hasn't worked out, unfortunately. And at this point in the season, it's true that, you know, each game counts, and each game is counting more and more than the last with the way that this divisional race and this wild card race is shaping up. Like Chris, you mentioned before, the Yankees are playing pretty decent baseball when it's not against the Red Sox. And, you know, the Blue Jays are hitting a rough patch here and there, but they're staying pretty steadily ahead of us. Yoshida, I'd bat him 10th if I could. I'd bat him 11th. And unfortunately, I think we're just kind of stuck with him. When the playoffs come, I think we say, all right, playoff roster, let's get real. You're just not good enough to be there, assuming he doesn't go crazy in September, which he could, I suppose, sort of replicate what he did the last 2 years and put up pretty decent numbers. But as it stands, I'm afraid that that dude is going to be hanging around our neck. And maybe in the last year of his contract, we would DFA him. But this offseason, I think the best case scenario is we eat a good 80% of that salary and send him to the Cardinals.
Yeah, we got to do something with him. We have to make the move with him that we were not capable of moving or making a move with Tristan Casas. You know, he was attached to so many trade rumors in the offseason, and we weren't able to pull the trigger. I mean, it's good for other teams because they probably saw what we all were seeing as Red Sox fans, saying, like, I want nothing to do with this guy. They want nothing to do with him, and it ended up working out, especially with his unfortunate injury. And even if we can't make a trade, like, just cut ties at this point. DFA the guy. Let's move on, because he is part of the problem with this team that has been a problem for years now. And I know Jules mentioned, I had it highlighted before, is runners in scoring position. You know, and it's misleading, right? Because the Sox, I believe, only the Brewers, Yankees, and Dodgers, and it might be another team, but I think those are the only three teams in the MLB that have scored more runs than the Sox. So you go, oh, number four in the MLB scoring runs. I think we're like plus almost 110 on the season. I think only the Yankees and one, maybe the Brewers, have a better run differential at this point. So you're like, oh, there's no problem with the Red Sox offense. But let's face it, we've had a lot of football score games, and the Rafaela home run. A lot of our home runs and big hits come with guys on first base, not runners in scoring position. And when you get to the playoffs, like, great. Yeah, if you could drive a guy in home from first base, God bless you. But you can't count on it. And it changes the whole dynamic of the way you're going to play and adapt your offense and small ball, situational hitting, when the guy's not a runner in scoring position in the playoffs. And the pitcher is going to change the way that they're pitching. And we have to figure that out. And I hate to say it, Yoshida's been one of the biggest problems with that since he came to the Red Sox, if we're being honest. And he's a super nice guy. You know, as a person, love Yoshida. But as a baseball player, as our DH, I almost just threw up when I said it. It's not the answer. We just have to, I hate to say it this way, let's just grow a set, and we gotta make the move.
Yeah, it is a shame because, like you said, I like the guy. I like the guy a lot. He's a fun guy to root for. And in the games where he does find a way to hit a double, it's electric, you know, but it's just not working this year. And we might be able to weather it right now, but Ref Snyder and Abreu are knocking on the door. They're saying, let me back in. And when those two guys are back, how can we justify playing Masataka Yoshida over any of them? It's just, you can't.
No, he can't see the field in the playoffs. He just can't.
It's a lack of athleticism, a lack of versatility, which, funnily enough, Heim Bloom was kind of the champion of. Heim Bloom said, let's bring in guys who can play anywhere. Let's bring in the Kike Hernandez, the Jose Iglesias, the stuff like that. And then he signs Yoshida when no one else wanted him. And he let Kyle Schwarber walk. You know, I don't want to go in on Heim Bloom. I think that history has done enough on that. But it's true. I mean, that's a holdover from the previous administration, and it is unfortunately a bit of a curse upon us.
Yeah, the irony of thinking about, like you just said, that Heim Bloom, you know, he was the champion of the roster that we have now, as far as just having versatility, utility, anyone can just play any position. And then you get Masataka Yoshida. Not only do you get him, but I imagine him, he's like the guy at the auction house that's literally sitting there alone with a mirror in front of him, just bidding against himself for Masataka Yoshida, who can't do anything that he is trying to accomplish, is just absolutely hilarious, but also scary and sad because we are still dealing with it now at this point.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I appreciate what the guy has done for us in the past. You know, in 2023, a 783 OPS, that's not bad. Last year, a 764 OPS, that's not bad. I know the splits especially favored him versus righties. He certainly had his moments. He certainly had his heroics. But right now, I mean, you got to call a spade a spade. Masataka Yoshida is not hitting well. We are in a race. And sure, you can say, oh, the Red Sox have a, you know, a 98% chance to make the playoffs according to this model, a 91% chance according to this model. But every game counts. I don't want to see what the model says. I want to see what my eyes say, which primarily is, what do the standings say? I don't just want to win a wild card spot. I want to win the wild card spot. Hell, I want to win the division. Yep. With Masataka Yoshida taking in bats at DH, he's decreasing our chances to do all those things.
Yeah, and a week ago, I wasn't even thinking about the division. I gave up on thinking about the division. And now they got me thinking about the division again. Because, I mean the Blue Jays got a tough series coming up. You know, they're playing Milwaukee. You know, I mean, that's tough. And, you know, if you can cut that lead down and you can go into that series at the end of the year with one of the teams having a one-game lead, two-game lead, anything can happen. And I really did give up, and I was like, all right, we'll get that number one spot. I'm fine with that, whatever. And now I'm like, hey, if the Blue Jays keep sliding – and they keep playing, and they have, I think it was like the seventh toughest record left or something. They have one of the toughest records left. And we all know we have one of the easiest records left. So, I mean, that math adds up for me.
Well, yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think they're with four ahead, and if they lose tonight, it's three, which I think it's an 8-6 game the last time I checked. So
yeah, it's 8-6 in the eighth last time I checked. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is that, I mean, the Blue Jays can hit. They could score two runs in the blink of an eye, unfortunately. They don't have a problem with their offense. But I think you need to go into the Blue Jays series down one game. Two, you expect a sweep is unrealistic. If you go down one, you take two or three, and you're tied coming out of there, I'd feel good. What I think is more likely, and again, I hate to say it, it's I could see us catching the Blue Jays for the reason you just said. The thing that scares me, we have an easier schedule, which is not bode well for the Red Sox because we don't, we have not showed the ability to take advantage of that. And it remains to be seen that we can until they do, which would be a great start, sweep the Orioles this series. And then you got me thinking, all right, maybe we can kind of start to take advantage of these weak teams. But the Yankees just like they, you want to talk about an easy schedule. I mean, they're playing AAA teams for the rest of the way out. The only really series where they have any challenge is the Sox coming up 2 weeks from now, in which I will be at the game on Saturday with my family. So, I mean, that could be a huge series. I mean, forget it. I mean, that could decide division, possibly, depending on what happens with the Blue Jays in between then. But that realistically is going to decide who more than likely is going to have the real front-running push to that first wild card coming out of that series.
Most definitely. I mean, right now, I'm just sort of focusing on what's ahead of us, because this Red Sox team, if they have proven one thing to us over this roller coaster of a year, it is the fact that they will lose games they shouldn't, win games they have no business to. They'll blow out bad teams. They'll blow out good teams. They'll get blown out by bad teams. They'll get blown out by good teams. No matter what happens, I mean, I'm just thankful that the Red Sox were able to come off that two-game sweep they suffered to the Orioles not too long ago, you know, just a week ago. And I feel like past years, right, Red Sox teams that weren't so mentally tough, that would have been a tailspin. We've pointed to a lot of moments in this season that could have been a potential tailspin. That Twins game after the jet lag is the perfect example of that. But to use the Yankees, a four-game series in the Bronx, as a get-right series and come right out of that into Baltimore and at least take three, take your first three out of four with Garrett Crochet on the mound in the fourth. I mean, it's great. It's really something to be proud of, and it's something to feel like, okay, maybe we're building on this. The Pirates are up next, the Guardians, the Diamondbacks, the Athletics. Lots of weird teams in there. Teams that, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but the Athletics to me, for some reason, feels like a trap series. I feel like I'm like, I don't want to take those because I think we have six games against them this season. I don't want to take those games for granted, you know, but ultimately the guys just have to keep playing good baseball. And a big part of that is going to be making sure that, I mean, Anthony and Bregman keep doing what they're doing, you know. Story, I mean, he's having a good week, a good 2 weeks, a good month, you know, good 3 months, you know, if he just keeps this momentum up. Jaron sort of needs to find his bat, but I'm not overly concerned because he's walking quite a bit, you know, so sometimes that can limit opportunities for hits if a guy is willing to take a pitch. But, you know, guys like Lowe, guys like, you know, Rafaela, these guys need to step up and do what they've been doing. And ultimately, when Ref Snyder comes back, when Abreu comes back, keep the runs coming, keep the pitching staff going. At least three out of every five games, you got to feel comfortable.
Definitely. I mean, it showed the graphic during the game that I didn't see the date, but it was since this date, the best ERAs in the AL, and it was Giolito, Bayo, Crochet all in the top five. So, I mean, I feel really good going into any series, really. I think you have to. You know, when you look at this, I don't think any team can match us starter for starter, end reliever for end reliever. You know, we have two guys that maybe three at the end. I really like this team, especially in the AL when it comes to playoff series.
I agree with you. I think on paper, there's no team that matches up with us pitcher for pitcher, specifically in the teams that we're going up against for the rest of the season. I agree with you though, Nick, and you know, someone just, I posted it that the A's have a winning record second half.
They match.
Yeah, and the thing is, the A's are very accustomed to playing spoiler at the end of seasons because they don't make the playoffs. But they are good at getting people to not make the playoffs. And that scares me because that's the type of series where I could see the Sox going in there, pounding their chest, and like, God forbid, get swept. I'm not saying it will happen, but it wouldn't shock me. Someone made a really good point, that really all this changed when Bregy came back. right? And you, I mean, you could even say that, listen, this team changed when Breggy came to it, right? The culture, he's part of that. But we hit a little bit of a spiral. He came back, things turned around. We also got rid of Devers. And you know what? There's an update. Toronto is now down by a run. So as we were talking about the fact that they could score in bunches, they may not lose tonight. So let's hope they do. But nonetheless, things have turned around for the Sox, but they still show that ability to not beat the teams that they should. And again, I don't want to keep harping on it. Tomorrow goes a long way. So let's take that momentum. We've already got a guaranteed 3 out of 4. It's a 1 o'clock game, weird start for a Thursday, but let's just get the sweep and let's carry that momentum.
Yeah. Did you see Crochet after Sadon hit that home run? He was up on, like, you know, he seemed excited. I think, you know, he's the type of guy, I think, that brings some energy like that into a start the next day and can really get energized about finishing off a sweep and having it be on him to do it.
For sure. And I think that that's kind of the nice thing about this team in general. The Red Sox for the past few years have been kind of cultivating vibes. You know, the dugout seems like a very fun place for quite a few years now. And I think that having guys who feed off each other, who play off each other, make that winning energy contagious. You know, as silly as some people might think it, I very much believe the intangibles in sports are very much alive, because ultimately these are people, you know. A bad night's sleep, a good night's sleep, that could make the difference in a start, honestly. And I love how we sort of got the spark in two different directions, two different ways. Bregman's return from the IL and Roman Anthony being called up. You have a veteran presence. You have one of the younger kids in the league, one of the youngest ages, I mean, you can realistically be called up at 21. Every now and again, you'll see a 19-year-old. But, yeah. I mean, it's just amazing to see 21 and what is Bregman right now? 33, I want to say? 32?
Yeah, I think 32, I think around there.
31, 32, 33.
Somewhere in there, early 30s. Yeah. So you have a decade, you know, separating these two guys. Yeah. And not just a decade, but really practically a decade of experience. And yet they are our 1-2, and I'm happy to live and die with those guys. You know, the rest of the offense needs to pull it together. Fortunately, it seems like lately we're having a different hero each night. Hopefully they can get fired on all cylinders. But so long as you have three good pitchers in the rotation and a great relief staff, you got to feel good in high leverage situations, which is going to be the playoffs encapsulated.
Damn.
Blue Jays take the lead. So with all that being said, but you know what the truth of the matter is we can't control what the Blue Jays do at this point. We can only control what I'm on the team. The Red Sox can only control what the Red Sox do at this point. And you know what? Keep playing good baseball. Do your thing. It's too early to be scoreboard watching. You know, we're in control of our own destiny at this point, at least with the wild card, right? So focus on that. And guess what? You know what? If Toronto coughs it up and you get into a series and you got the chance to strike, then we'll worry about it then. But I feel really good about the Red Sox, and I feel a hell of a lot better after Rafael Isleroaks tonight. So that's all I got.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. I agree. You know, as much as I love to hate watch and, you know, send bad juju to other teams, you know, burn some totems, something like that, you know, get the voodoo dolls out. You know, it's true. We can't control Toronto's destiny until that penultimate series that we have against them, really. Yep. We'll see if we're close enough to strike at them. It's very possible that we could be. I mean, it would be electric to go in there and have the guys say, hey, all right, we need to sweep them to get a chance. And if you don't, you don't. But, you know, put that on the table and say, all right, are you guys ready for, like, the postseason before the postseason? But otherwise, I mean, I'm just happy that this team is excelling. The Blue Jays are a very good team. As much as I don't like to finish second, you know, in a division race, there's no shame in finishing second to a team like Toronto this year.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, we won, you know, I mean, and the early thousands, we were winning like 95 games and coming in second to the Yankees. So, you know, sometimes it's just, you got whatever, however you get in is fine by me.
Yeah, I don't care where we finish in the regular season standings. I just want to be the last team standing in October.
Yep.
100%, you know, or, you know, I just want to see good playoff baseball again. I want a deep run, you know, even if it's like 21 and we get bounced in the ALCS, if we put up a fight, you know, I'll be happy with that. Obviously, I'd love a World Series, but there's still a lot of baseball to be played. Another month to go, a lot of ups and downs. I mean, we'll, you know, see what the September call-ups happen to be. For right now, what's your guys' prediction for tomorrow? Garrett Crochet versus Cade Povich at the 1:05 p.m. start, like you said, Chris. What do you feel?
I mean, listen, I expect the sweep at this point. There's absolutely no reason not to get the sweep with Garrett Crochet on the mound. I don't care who he's facing at this point. So let's just get it. I am a little worried because it's the type of game that, you know, we all expect and we might cough up, but I think it's going to happen. Carry that momentum, and then let's see where we are heading into the weekend.
Yeah, I have a lot of faith in Crochet to finish this off. I feel very good about it.
Most definitely. I mean, this is the most confident you can feel. I mean, your ace on the bump after an electric win, just like you said, Doug, he was going crazy in the dugout like he always does. I mean, yeah, I love that about him.
Right, yeah, me too.
And yeah, I think the Sox are poised to make up for that error last week where – we say, all right, Baltimore, you know what? You want to sweep us in a two-game series, that's fine. We'll sweep you in a four-game series. That would just be a great little, you know, middle finger to them and really give us some hefty momentum going into the Pirates series where we will be. I misspoke last night. I was mistaken about Paul Skeens not pitching against us. No, he will be. And believe me, we're going to need our A game against him. But for right now, games against Baltimore. And hopefully Garrett Crochet can put up another War Pig worthy start. And we'll see who the hero on the offense is tomorrow. Could be Anthony, could be Rafael, it could be Wong for all we know. So Narvaez, anyone. So any closing thoughts, gents?
None for me.
No, go Sox.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for joining us. Thank you all for listening in. It's been a super active chat here, which is always a pleasure to see. I've been Nick, joined by Doug and Chris. We've been the Bastards of Boston. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next time. Go Red Sox.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.